The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the talk this evening is about wisdom. And this word for me, when applied to this practice, initially it seemed kind of mysterious. You know, what is wisdom? I wasn't so sure. I had one teacher in particular, Sayadaw Utejaniya, who used this word a lot. And he would say things like, see the wisdom that's present. And I would think, okay, I'll see about that. And so this talk partly is explored from that perspective. What is it? What is wisdom? What is this aspect of wisdom that comes during our practice? And how is it experienced? How do we know wisdom in our experience? To set the stage about wisdom, I think it's important to look at the context in which we are finding wisdom. In a lot of fields, we gain wisdom through study, through knowledge. There's a lot of things we can have wisdom about, like how to drive a car. We can be wise about how to drive a car, or we can be wise about how to raise our children, or we can be wise about our field. We can have knowledge and wisdom in these areas. The wisdom in terms of this practice is actually pretty specific. The Buddha, and I think it's related to what the Buddha, the question that the Buddha was exploring when he left his home and went out to understand his mind. And that's the question of suffering. When he left his home, it said that he was exploring this question of why is it that we suffer? You know, and why is it that I, being subject to aging, illness, and death, am trying to find happiness in those things that are also subject to aging, illness, and death? How does that work? So the problem the Buddha was trying to solve was this problem of suffering. And in our understanding through our practice, we start to see that there's a completely different perspective on this question than we typically, from our ordinary perspective, think about. What is suffering? You know, in our ordinary perspective, it's the pain that's happening or things that people are doing that cause us grief. In this reflection, in this exploration the Buddha was making, his understanding around suffering is that it's essentially our own. There, he said, yes, there is all of this stuff that happens in the world. There's unpleasant things that happen to us. There's unpleasant bodily sensations. You know, we fall down, we hurt ourselves, we injure our backs. We have, you know, we cut ourselves with a knife. There's that unpleasant bodily experience that happens, and that's a pain. And then there's things that other people do that we don't like, and that's perhaps unfortunate. But he said, those things in the world, he said, that's not really what the problem is. The problem, as he, in exploring his own mind, the problem as he understood it is it's our reactivity to, it's our reactivity to those things that really is the source of our problem. The word dukkha, which is the Pali term that's usually translated as suffering, actually in the Pali, it has a lot of meaning to it. It's much broader than the word that we usually think of. It's much broader than the meaning we usually think of when we hear the word suffering. The word suffering often conjures up large problems, diagnoses of major illness or car accidents or breakups with partners. But the word dukkha actually encompasses any kind of unsatisfactoriness, stress, feeling of things aren't quite right. Well, things are okay, but I would just like it to be a little bit different. Yeah, things are good, but not but, you know. That's that manifestation of I'd like just a little bit more, or a little bit more of that, a little bit less of that. That's also dukkha. And the Buddha, in looking at the way people are in the world, as he came to understand that it's in our own minds that we don't like things that are happening, or want more of this or less of that. That's something that's happening in our own minds. That's a product of wanting, of holding, of not accepting things the way they are. And that's something that happens inside of us. And he looked out at the world and he saw that in trying to be happy, he looked out at the world and he saw, yeah, people are trying to be happy. They're looking for happiness. They're trying to find happiness. But they are doing the exact things that are actually keeping them tied to the struggle. In trying to be happy, our typical way of trying to be happy is to get more of what we want, to get rid of what we don't want. And that very movement around trying to control, to manipulate the environment, trying to make sure we don't have any more of that, thank you, trying to make sure we have more of that, yes, that I want. That very wanting is something that keeps us tied to this cycle of stress, of unsatisfactoriness, of the feeling that things are just not the way we want them to be. So the Buddha, in looking at his own mind, began to see, you know, it's not the not having what we want that causes our suffering. He said it's the wanting to have that causes our suffering. And so the wisdom of the Buddha is around this really fundamental shift of perspective around where happiness comes from. So there are different ways that wisdom is described in the texts. One of the key ways that wisdom is defined, the first noble truth, wise view, sets us on the path. Wise view, wise understanding. The Buddha says this is crucial for us to begin the path, to have an understanding of what? He said, to have an understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So this is one of the key definitions of what wisdom is in this practice, in this path. And the understanding, the Four Noble Truths are, I'll just state them. No surprise, since the problem the Buddha was trying to solve is a problem of suffering, the Four Noble Truths are reflections on suffering. The first one, there is dukkha. There is this unsatisfactoriness. And then he said, the second noble truth is this unsatisfactoriness has a cause. It's not random in our lives, and this is actually an important statement. It's not random. It has a cause. And he said, the cause lies in our own mind stream. So given that, and that's actually good news too, that the cause of our unsatisfaction, our dissatisfaction lies within our own minds is good news, because it means that there's a possibility for us to change our minds. That's possible. And he said that's possible. That's the third noble truth. The possibility that this dukkha can end, this unsatisfactoriness can end. The fourth noble truth is that there is a path leading to the end of suffering. The Eightfold Path, wise understanding, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. So these Four Noble Truths in terms of wisdom, you know, we often think of wisdom as something that we acquire. We put it into our brains and then we know it. I mean, that's often the way we relate to wisdom. You know, we go to school, we study algebra, we learn algebra. Now, that's how we gain our knowledge, by studying, by thinking about things. The wisdom of this practice has more depth than that. We have to start there. We have to start with learning about, exploring, hearing the teachings. But then we have to put it into practice. Then we have to reflect on it. Ask, how does it apply to us? How can I practice with this? How can I explore this truth of unsatisfactoriness, of dukkha? How can I explore this in my life? And the Buddha helped us out here. He said that with respect to each of these Four Noble Truths, there's actually an action associated with each truth. And so part of the wisdom of these Four Noble Truths isn't that they are just simply meant to be believed. They are meant to be put into practice. So the truth of dukkha, it is said that this unsatisfactoriness, this suffering, this stress, this unreliability is another word for this term. It's meant to be understood. Not understood in an intellectual way, not understood through thought, but understood through experience. What is the experience of stress, dissatisfaction, suffering? How is it experienced as a human being? The truth of the cause of suffering is this wanting things to be other than they are, said to be the cause of suffering. The Buddha suggested that we let go of the cause of suffering. Now, if we have a cause for something, if the cause is not present, the result doesn't happen. And so if that wanting, as I said, it's not the not having that creates the suffering. We think it's the not having that creates the suffering. We've experienced that plenty of times, this not having creating suffering. But the Buddha suggests that we look back at the wanting to have. If we watch the wanting to have, if we watch the wanting, rather than acting on the wanting, if we watch the wanting, we'll see that because it's an impermanent phenomenon, it will let go. So what happens when that wanting lets go? There's no problem. If we don't want things to be other than they are, there's no problem. So the letting go of the wanting. Then the realizing of the release from suffering. The realization, the recognition. When we see that kind of letting go happen and we feel the peace, the ease, the coolness, the release that happens as we let go of wanting. I've seen this in my own practice and times really clearly, the grip of wanting release. And it feels like being released from a vice grip. It is so easeful. Feeling that release is a part of this third noble truth. Recognizing, that's what it's like to have the wanting go away. And then the cultivating of the Eightfold Path. And so the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths is not simply about believing them, not simply about hearing them and saying, okay, do I believe that or not? It's not about belief. It's about engagement. So taking in the teachings and practicing with them. So that's one way that wisdom is defined in the texts, this understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And it's talked about in a variety of ways from this perspective. It's not so much stated as, yes, wisdom is, there is suffering, there's a cause of suffering, there's a cessation of suffering, and there's a path leading to the cessation of suffering. Actually, he says, there is clinging, for instance. And he said, we need to see that clinging is present. We need to understand the cause of clinging. We need to see the clinging let go, and we need to cultivate the way towards letting go of clinging. So the framework of the Four Noble Truths is used with respect to so many different experiences that we have. So that, it's not just about believing these Four Noble Truths, it's about what's happening right now. Is what's happening suffering? What is its cause? How is it released? What are the tools I can cultivate to support this understanding? Another aspect of wisdom is an aspect of what is skillful and what is unskillful with respect to, essentially, again, no big surprise, what is skillful with respect to letting go of suffering or moving away from suffering. What is unskillful with respect to that? What is it? What are the types of actions? What are the types of mind states that lead us to suffering? What are the types of actions, mind states that lead us away from suffering? So this is another aspect of wisdom, seeing that in our own minds. What are the kinds of states of mind that support us in the movement towards happiness, towards freedom, towards letting go? And what are the kinds of mind states that kind of drag us in our experience right to suffering? And the Buddha said the main kind of dividing line around these is this, the states of mind that are based in greed, that are based in aversion, that are based in delusion. Those are the mind states to watch out for. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them that are based in those. Boredom, frustration, irritation, annoyance, pride, anger, hostility, craving, lust, desire, annoyance. There's a ton of them. There's a lot of minds. And what, at one point on the other retreat I was just teaching, somebody started, I think it was Jack, he started in the A's, and he named all of these states of mind, and then he got to the B's, and he started going, there's so many of these states of mind. It's actually helpful to make lists for yourself and get familiar with the types of states of mind that frequent you and recognize whether they're helpful or not. There are also a whole bunch of skillful mind states. Those are states of mind based in non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. States of mind like love, compassion, wisdom, generosity, kindness, concentration, equanimity. There's a group or a collection of kind of wholesome emotions that support us on the path. So the motivations for our actions, often when we start to observe our intentions in the world, we see that a lot of our intentions are based in kind of not so helpful motivations of wanting things to be a certain way, or, you know, of greed or of dislike. And we are so immersed in that way of acting that it's hard for us to see, you know, that there are a lot of times people say, well, you know, I don't want to let go of my anger because it helps me to get things done. And there's truth to that. Anger can be a motivator towards doing, towards getting things done. And we have been involved in that kind of being motivated by that kind of thing for so long that it's hard for us to recognize that there are other states of mind that can motivate us. And for instance, if there's anger at injustice that is motivating action, what about seeing? Because I would imagine that in that kind of situation, there's also compassion in your heart, a feeling of a wish to alleviate suffering in your heart. can you, rather than emphasize the anger, emphasize the compassion as a motivation? So we get to know these mind states. We get to know which ones are helpful for us, which ones are unhelpful for us. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here. So with respect to our practice, you know, initially as we explore wisdom in our practice, we have to hear about it. So, you know, what I've just talked about just now, this is a little bit of the kind of communication around what is the shift of perspective we're talking about. What is this shift of perspective? And we take that in, we learn about it, we hear about it. This is one aspect of wisdom. It's one of the ways that wisdom works. It's like, you know, going to college or going to high school and opening the book and reading and taking in the information. You know, we start with information. Very few of us, without starting with this particular bit of information, would come up with the understanding that the issue around our dissatisfaction in life really is in our own minds. We seem to always put it out there. If only this could be different. If only that could be different. So we need to take in this information. This is the first part of wisdom. The second part of wisdom is reflecting on it, thinking about it, exploring it in our minds, thinking about, does this make sense to me? How can I explore this? What, you know, so we reflect on it, we think about it. So these first two are in the realm of the way that we typically learn things. Both of these two are in the realm of the way we typically learn things. We take knowledge in and we think about it, we reflect on it. The deepening of wisdom comes when we actually decide to engage with these teachings, because all of this wisdom that's offered actually is meant to be engaged with. The Buddha was a pragmatist. He didn't just say things and say, here, believe this. He said, try this. Come and see. It was one of the terms that is a description of the Dharma. It is meant to be observed for ourselves. Come and see. So we explore for ourselves, and the wisdom that happens, the wisdom that begins to grow based on our practice, that's the wisdom of insight. When we actually begin to see for ourselves this shift of perspective, we experience it in our own hearts and minds, we see, oh my gosh, look at this. This anger that I'm experiencing right now is happening because of something in my own mind. So we see that. So we see a shift. And that's the beginning of the deepening of wisdom and how wisdom manifests as a quality in our minds. So I'd like to talk about some of the ways that we experience this. You know, how does it happen in our practice so that you can actually begin to see? Because I think many of you have been practicing quite a lot and you've experienced this. You've experienced these kinds of shifts, but you may not have consciously recognized it as this is wisdom. So this is what my teacher was pointing to when he said, go observe the arising of wisdom in your experience. He was pointing to seeing these shifts of perspective. So I'd like to go through some of them, some of the ones that are maybe familiar to you, so that you might be able to recognize, oh yeah, this is wisdom that's happening. When we recognize wisdom, this is one of the beautiful things about mindfulness practice. When I was talking about those skillful experiences, those skillful qualities of mind, those unskillful qualities of mind before, one of the great things about mindfulness practice is when we become mindful of those qualities of mind that are unskillful, that tend to lead us to suffering. It creates the conditions for those states of mind to diminish. We become mindful of anger. It creates the conditions for anger to let go. We become mindful of pride. It creates the conditions for pride to let go. On the other side, when we become mindful of those beautiful qualities, those wholesome qualities like equanimity, concentration, wisdom, love, generosity, when mindfulness takes in, oh, this is generosity happening right now. When mindfulness takes in, this is wisdom happening right now. It creates the conditions for those to appear more frequently in our minds. It's kind of this wonderful quality of mindfulness. When we are mindful, it naturally, when we are mindful from this perspective of understanding what leads us to suffering and what leads us away from suffering, when we're mindful looking at things from that perspective, it naturally begins to diminish those unwholesome, unskillful qualities and increase those skillful qualities. So different ways that we experience this wisdom. You know, when you can recognize that wisdom, it helps it to grow. One of the things we have to recognize is that wisdom usually develops through contact with dukkha. So if you're suffering, if there's something happening like that, you don't have to be, you know, oh, suffering. It can be, oh, there's a possibility for wisdom to happen here, you know. So wisdom happens, wisdom grows from meeting suffering. It's not a mistake. Our minds will, the suffering that happens is coming about because of turnings, tensions in our minds. And we're meeting our own minds as we practice. So different ways this can be felt or experienced. So one of the ones that's kind of that may be familiar to you in being mindful of something challenging. You know, you're observing a difficult emotion, one of the afflictive emotions of frustration or irritation or annoyance. You recognize it. Okay, here, this is frustration. Let me be mindful of this. Let me be aware of this. You may, at some point in that mindfulness, feel a little shift. A little bit of space opens around it. So, oh, this is just anger. This is just frustration. You know, rather than being caught in it, we feel a little bit stepped back from it, from this perspective of mindfulness. This is wisdom. This is wisdom operating. It's kind of like what happens there is that we move from the perspective of being caught into that state of mind to that stepped back perspective. When we can have that perspective, oh, this is just anger. It's like there's not an extra spin put in there, like this is anger and I need to do something about it. I need to fix this. I need to change it. I need to get back at that person. So it's like when we can see, oh, this is anger, it loosens the tentacles of all those extra things that we add, all those extra ideas we have about anger. Kind of, I like to think of this as like putting a car into neutral. You know, it takes the juice out of the things that are feeding that state of mind. It's like disengaging the gears. This is wisdom. This is wisdom operating. Enough wisdom has arisen to allow you to have that sense of space. Enough wisdom has arisen to have you let go of the belief that you have to do something about this and take action about it right now. There's enough space for that. Another way that we experience or see wisdom happening is that we may start to, through exploring something, perhaps a pattern that recurs frequently, we may start to recognize that there are certain things that will trigger this pattern for us. So we have a pattern of impatience, for instance. And you might observe this pattern over and over again and begin to see, what is it that's triggering it? This is another aspect of wisdom that we begin to see as the Second Noble Truth states that this suffering has a cause. So the triggers for our patterns, our difficult states of mind, can be seen and can be known. As we begin to see the things that kind of have us leaping off of ideas, views, beliefs, situations in the world that will trigger this impatience or whatever your pattern is, as you begin to see the causes, you can begin to, or sometimes it might be helpful to avoid some of those causes. So for instance, you know, I sometimes find that with certain people engaging in political discussions doesn't lead to very wholesome states of mind. You know? And it may be helpful to just let that topic go, you know? So we can at times avoid the causes. At other times, it's helpful to simply observe the causes, to recognize these causes at play. And often what happens, what we start to see, especially with patterns of mind, we start to see that the things that are triggering it are actually things that are happening in our own minds. So, for instance, I had a strong pattern of anger at one particular person, and I began to recognize, at some point I began to recognize that, you know, thoughts about that person triggered the anger. That makes perfect sense, you know. It's like, I almost thought it for a while, I thought there was a kind of a, they were fused, that when those thoughts came up, the anger had to come up. But I began to see with some practice that the thoughts could come up and I could be present just before seeing the anger. You know, so I could begin to see, oh my goodness, they're not actually fused. There's a little tiny space between that thought coming up and the anger coming up. So we can begin to see these causes. This is an interesting time in practice when we can begin to see how our difficult states of mind are triggered. In my own experience, there's kind of two phases or two parts that happen here. One is that we spend time observing our afflictive emotion. We spend time observing the suffering. I spent a lot of time observing anger. And I spent a lot of time observing anger before I could see the triggers for it, of course. I mean, I was just lost in the anger, and then, oh, here I am, present now. Anger is present. Okay, what is it like to be angry? You know, turning towards that. Okay, this is anger. Can I be with this? So the mind began to understand, not me consciously, not in my, you know, oh, this part of the thing goes here in my brain. You know, it wasn't a conscious kind of thing, but the mind at a very deep level began to understand, this anger, this burns me up. This anger hurts. When I first started looking at anger, I could see my assumption was, this anger hurts them. I didn't see that it was hurting me. So this is another part of the wisdom, actually. This is another gaining of wisdom that we begin to see, our minds begin to see through that First Noble Truth of understanding dukkha. Our minds begin to see dukkha, this dukkha is painful for us. So this recognition that this anger itself was suffering for me, it's like, duh, you know, it was kind of remarkable to me that I spent years being angry and didn't realize how painful it was. It's just like, wow, you know, the mind could just be so deluded about these things. So seeing this suffering of this, then when the mind started to see the triggers, when the mind began to recognize, oh, this thought in the mind, heading towards anger. When the mindfulness began to reveal the triggers, the mind itself began to let go of that direction towards anger. Because seeing the trigger, it's like the mind sees, oh yeah, there it is, there's that trigger, and there's this kind of momentum. Oh, let me get angry. Let me jump on that thought and get angry. The mind at a very deep level recognizes, well, if that's the path you're going to take, it's going to result in pain, suffering. And the mind begins to let it go. Because it has spent time, it has gained wisdom about the truth of dukkha. So in seeing the cause, the mind begins to naturally let it go. So this is also wisdom. I have a lot more ways that I've experienced this, you know, this kind of wisdom, this, you know, wisdom arising. But I want to hear if there's anything in the room. We have about 5 minutes, so I want to just see if there's any questions or comments on what I've said so far. Yeah, back here.
The mind states, when one is already in a mind state, let's say anger, they're not so easy to change.
That's right.
It's already caught up in
yes.
it. And it also feels like it's habitual. Like one has certain mind states, they're just habit, and they just come up so quickly.
Yes.
And so, you know, how does one really get out of it?
So the getting out of it is it's a long project. It's not something, oh, here it is. Let me be mindful of anger, and poof, it disappears forever. It's a much longer kind of trajectory. The willingness to, in that anger, as you say, you know, just the recognition of anger, it doesn't just go away when we become mindful of it. If you can have a little bit of that sense of distance of, okay, here's anger, then we can begin to recognize, okay, here's what anger is like. Turning towards the experience of anger, what does it feel like to be a human being that is angry? Turning towards that experience, letting go of thoughts associated with it. That's a big one, actually. If you can let go of the thoughts, he said, she said, they did, they shouldn't have done, I'm going to do, all of the thoughts that kind of cycle back and feed the anger. If you can let those go, and this is true for many of our afflictive states of mind, they have their own stories. If you can recognize the story of those afflictive states of mind and set that aside in favor of being with the experience of the mind and body in that state, now that's not easy because these afflictive states don't feel good. So it takes some courage. It takes courage to turn towards these states. That courage is well worth it, because it is the beginning of the mind getting this education of this is dukkha. You know, we begin to deeply understand, like, you know, the aha in my mind, oh my gosh, you know, I thought it was causing problems for that person for me to be angry, but really it's painful here. So the mind gets that at a very deep level and slowly begins to recognize how not to go there. It's kind of a retraining of our minds. And it's a slow process, but it is doable. It is absolutely doable. It is absolutely possible. It takes courage. It takes willingness to turn towards that difficulty and be with it. It also takes discernment about when it's not possible for us to be mindful of that difficulty. Because there are times when our habits particularly when they're strong habits, when those habits are so strong that they swamp our ability to be mindful. So if you find in trying to pay attention, to turn your attention towards a difficulty like this, that you just get sucked back into the black hole, you know, you go down the rabbit hole of that difficulty again, if you find that happening, it's really helpful to turn towards something else, to let go of trying to be mindful of it at that point, and just turn towards something neutral, you know, feet on the ground, being in nature, just something that allows your mind to let go. I would not recommend turning on the television and trying to distract yourself like that. I mean, you're really likely to find something on the television that will just hook you right back into it. So I'd really recommend mindful distraction here, you know, turning your mind to something and being present with it. Just letting that difficulty be in the background. Not turning away with aversion, but just can you set it aside? So it takes some willingness, it takes courage, and it takes discernment to do this. But it is doable. So I can only just encourage you there.
Yeah, I have done it sometimes also with fear, that I just allow myself to feel the fear rather than thinking about it.
Yes. Yeah, when we can let go of the thoughts, that's a huge win for us.
But I find with anger, when I'm angry, I have a lot of thoughts and my mind wants to solve the situation, you know. And
so if you can
spinning.
If you can let go of that and turn towards the feeling in the body, mm-hmm. of what does it feel like to be angry, and just notice you might get pulled to that spinning. Come back to the body. Just see if you can let go of those thoughts. And if you can't let go of those thoughts, turn your attention to something else entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to stop.
Thank you.
So thank you for your attention.